Welcome to Care and Connect, a new series of interviews on KPTZ that features one of our community's many nonprofit organizations and goes into depth about the many facets of their efforts. I'm Marianne McNellis, host of the KPTZ interview show called Our Town. Care and Connect will feature one nonprofit organization each quarter. The first in the series is Habitat for Humanity, and my guest today is Jamie Machiewski, the executive director of the East Jefferson branch of Habitat. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you.
Before we get started on the work that Habitat does in this community, can you fill us in on the general background of the group? Like, when did it get started and where?
I'd love to. Habitat for Humanity is almost 40 years old. Next year will be our 40th birthday. We started really overseas in what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa when we were building homes there for people who needed them.
Wait a minute. You say we. Who were the original we?
That's a great question. So 1976, most people associate President Carter with Habitat for Humanity, but he wasn't involved yet. Hmm. It was a man named Millard Fuller, a person who had been a businessman for most of his life and had decided to give up his business career and his fortune and instead invest it in low-income people who needed housing. So the first work was in Zaire then, now Congo, and the people there then decided they wanted to help start something in Guatemala. And at the same time, Habitat was beginning in rural Georgia. So it began both overseas and in Georgia, and it spread pretty quickly.
Do you have any idea where the name came from, Habitat for Humanity? Where's that from?
I'm sure that was a Millard Fuller term. It's just a great way to describe it.
Yeah, it is. But I just wondered if there was a story expanding on it. Okay, so it started in Africa, but also rural Georgia was pretty early on. Where is Habitat now? How many countries?
Habitat for Humanity is in many countries. I wish I had that number. I think it's about 50 countries. There are 1,400 affiliates in the United States.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And in the state of Washington, do you have any idea how many there are?
There are about 30 in Washington State, almost one for each county. There's even one county that has three in eastern Washington.
Well, how does it work? Is it all through, sort of central headquarters, or are the different groups independent? How does it work?
We have a mother organization, Habitat for Humanity International, and they're headquartered in Atlanta. We are affiliated with them. We are our own nonprofit, our own corporation, but we are under the nonprofit umbrella of the Habitat for Humanity International. And then we are expected to abide by certain standards so that everybody, all habitats are similar. We provide housing through partnerships with people who are low-income people. They buy their home with no profit and at an affordable cost to them. And they do sweat equity to help build it. So all habitats are that way.
So there's sort of a rule book or a guidebook, if you want to call it that, so that you operate in the same fashion?
There is.
So how many houses have been built over those 40 years? You don't have to be exact count, but close to it.
Mm-hmm. We've built about 1 million homes and served about 3 million people now.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. The group that in 1976, when they were starting out and trying to envision it, were trying to say, could we be so bold as to think we might be able to reach 100,000?
And yet it's over 1 million. Wow. And what about locally? When did Habitat for Humanity first open up in Port Townsend?
Our first home in East Jefferson County was in 1998, and there were people who were working to get it going before that for several years, but that was the first home, and it was in Port Townsend, and the second home was in Irondale. Hmm. So we began immediately as an East Jefferson County affiliate.
And in the space of time since 98 till now, how many homes have been built?
We've completed 34 homes, and we've completed 16 repair projects for homes in the rest of the county, in the Quilcene area specifically.
So where does Habitat get the money?
Oh boy, we have such generous donors. That's a huge part of Habitat for Humanity. We raise the money up front to build the homes, and then we sell the homes to people and they pay it back to us over time. And that money that comes back as they pay back their mortgage goes into building more homes. So one of the important streams are the donors who give from $5 a month up to many thousands of dollars a year to help Habitat build homes or repair homes. The second source of funding for our affiliate is the Habitat for Humanity store. We have two of those, and your listeners will be familiar with the one in Port Townsend at the Roundabout. We also have one in Quilcene, a smaller store, but both have been so important to raising funds, and people donate their wonderful furniture and antiques, and many times people call us to get the estates of parents or loved ones, and we turn those into dollars. And then the third source is the mortgages that I mentioned to you.
Well, and that's sort of a misunderstanding I think a lot of people have. I think a lot of people think that the homes are free to the people who are going in, but you were telling me that's not true. Can you explain it a little more?
You bet. Habitat's a hand up. It's not a handout. So people who come into our program have to have a source of income. That's a reliable source of income, and they actually become a homeowner with a mortgage, and they pay back their mortgage. The mortgage company may be Habitat. It may be the USDA, a government program that has a subsidized loan rate, or it may be a bank, and their loan will be at a cost, though, to them where they're not paying more than 30% of their income each month for their home payment, for their mortgage payment, which means that many people who go through the Habitat program actually reduce the cost of their housing each month, and they still become homeowners. It's kind of an exciting proposition.
Wow. So if I wanted to see if I could qualify for a Habitat home, what would I do? What's the process?
Call us at the office, 379-2827. We would love to talk with you. You could look on our website first if you'd like to see at habitatejc.org. But you can call us and we'll sit down with you and go through what it takes to become a Habitat homeowner. We will tell you when you come by, Mary Ann, to meet with us that you need to have a source of income that's steady and be able to repay a mortgage. So we'll look at your credit and make sure that you have a track record of paying back your obligations, although we don't have a particular credit score we look at. And people, we work with many people who actually don't have traditional credit, and we can use other ways of determining that you pay back your obligations, your cell phone bill or your utilities, for example, or your rent. We also look at that you're a low-income person and that you need housing, that you can't solve your housing situation on your own. So need can look many different ways. Sometimes people have overcrowded housing. Sometimes they might have a disabled family member and the housing is not good for them. Sometimes their housing makes their kids sick because it has mold in it and they can't fix that. Maybe it's temporary housing. So there's lots of different ways that people come into Habitat for the need for housing. And then the third thing is you have to be willing to help build your house, and you'll put in some sweat equity. We'll make that work for you if you have certain needs and you can't get on a ladder or something like that to help build. That's no problem. We'll design the kind of work you do, but you do have to be willing to help build it. That's your sweat equity.
I see. So you have to have a job and some sort of credit history, correct?
You have to have a source of income that is a stable source of income. That might be Social Security if it's sufficient, or retirement income that's sufficient to afford the mortgage, or it might be something else that you can rely on. Typically, it's service wages. We have people in our community, many service workers, from bank tellers to retail workers to assistants in medical offices, school bus drivers. There are many people, landscapers, who make those service worker kinds of wages from, say, $10 an hour to $15 an hour. And rent is extremely high in our county.
What's the average rent in Jefferson County?
The The federal government says the fair market rent for a two-bedroom unit is $960 a month. Hmm. That's a lot of money.
It is.
And our typical Habitat mortgage will be more like $650 a month.
Wow. Well, do you mainly offer houses to people with kids? My impression is it's like single mothers with children.
That is a common impression, and we don't just offer to single parents with children. We serve everybody in this county. We have built in partnership with single parents for sure and their children. We've built in partnership with two-parent families with kids. We've built in partnership with single adults without children, with married adults or partnered adults without children. We've built with younger people in their 20s and older people who are retired, and we are open to serving everybody.
Well, as you know, Jefferson County has an older population, statistically speaking. So are there, in fact, senior citizens who have used some of your houses?
Yes, there are.
Interesting. And of the 35, I think you said, houses that so far, do people tend to move in and then sort of stay forever, or do they move in and out? How does that work?
Out of the 34 houses that we've completed, we've had 5 of those houses turn over. Those homeowners have moved on to other communities and wanted to sell their house. We buy the house back. And the way we write the mortgage ensures that they're not flipping it to make a big profit on it.
Yeah.
We buy it back and do minor repairs and then put another homeowner in that
house. I see, because I could see that there could potentially be a danger of someone getting a house and then reselling it at a big profit. Or
right, because we're selling the house at below what the appraised
market
is,
yeah.
Generally speaking. We put a silent second mortgage on our houses to make sure that we have the ability to buy it back and that the buyer isn't able to make a big profit. Over time, they earn equity in the house, and it certainly becomes important to them for their future plans and to building some stability and equity. But it doesn't become a great profit enterprise.
Okay, but what happens, I mean, in East Jefferson County, we haven't reached this point, but let's say typically people, when they die, their house is an asset that they leave to their children or to someone. Is that not possible? What happens if someone dies?
If someone dies, their home will be transferring ownership, and so Habitat for Humanity, our board, would at that point have the right to buy back the home if that happens. It hasn't happened so far, but what we will do if that happens, and when it does happen in the future, we'll look at who the heir is, the designated heir of that home buyer, and determine if that person is a low-income person who would qualify for Habitat. And if so, we would allow that person probably to be the person who buys the house and stays in the house.
But if it's, let's say someone dies and their heir is not low income, will Habitat then just buy back the house?
That's what our mortgage is written to do, that we would have the ability to buy the house back and
yeah.
to sell it to another qualified
buyer. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's talk a little bit about the new development that is going up here in Port Townsend. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
That's really an exciting development. On Hancock Street, right across from Seaport Landing and Discovery View, two of our retirement centers, we were able to put in the infrastructure for 12 new homes and a park, thanks to really amazing generosity from the community. We had more than 110 donors who donated to make the park happen, called Nora's Neighborhood Park, in memory of Nora Porter, a longtime community activist. We also had a very generous grant from the Birkenfeld Trust at the Seattle Foundation to help us install the infrastructure. And we had a number of other donors who were very foresightful in helping to make this happen in a big way. So we have a lovely little development that's going in, and the first two houses should be done in June with the homeowners to move in. We're still accepting applications for the rest of the homes, and we're very excited about that. We'll be building that project over the next 3 years, and we'll be complete then.
Yeah, well, I have a friend who lives up near there, and we often go walk her little dog, Eddie, around. And so we've been monitoring the process. And the houses really are quite cute. How big are the houses going to be in that little development?
The two houses that are being built right now are two-bedroom houses, and they're both 900 square feet. They have one bath. They're fairly simple floor plans. There's no bay windows or bump outs. Or actually, if you go by there or walk by, you'll see that they look quite different from each other. They're actually identical floor plans. We've just turned them around and flipped them over.
Really? Because they do look different.
They do, don't they? And we work hard to try to put a lot of variety into our communities so that it doesn't look like we've just done cracker boxes.
Well, now, do you have a big waiting list for the other houses in that development?
We don't. We have room.
Really?
If somebody would like to call us and talk with us about it, we would love to talk with them about whether they might qualify to buy a home in that development.
Wow, because I just had the impression there would be a waiting list for houses.
We have three openings right now.
That's great.
It is great. It's
so I hope that people listening to the show will think if they are qualified to give a call. I guess you're willing to explore it with people and see if they... Yeah.
And maybe if they aren't, maybe they know someone who is. Maybe their coworker's child or their landscaper or their babysitter or their nephew.
Right, right. Well, do most of the people who come into your houses, have they been homeowners before, or is this usually a first-time experience for them?
Typically, this is the first time. It's not a requirement, and so we have had people who've been homeowners in the past.
Well, owning a home is a lot different than renting. Do you do any educational things to help people understand the process?
We require a minimum of 30 hours of home buyer education so that people are very well prepared. It is a lot different to own a home than to rent. And I suppose you could say the first thing that people would know the difference is that if something breaks, you don't have a landlord to call to come fix it. You have to figure out what to do, whether you call the plumber yourself or you know how to fix the tank, the ball that started to fail. You need to take care of it. So we do lots of training, but there are other things we do in preparing people to be homeowners. We do a lot of financial counseling, financial literacy, to prepare people so that they are going to be able to save the money they need to replace the roof in 15 years or 20 years when it's ready, or to replace the hot water heater when it fails. They need to have reserves in place. They can't simply go forward as though with renting, which you can go forward and not plan for it. There are many other things. We do conflict resolution training with our homeowners. They'll be part of neighborhoods. They can't move away from their neighbors any longer. They're part of it. And so they need to know how to do that. We train them in the legal aspects of owning a home, help them to understand about preparing wills. We don't train them how to prepare wills, but they need to know about doing that because now they're going to have a very large asset, probably the largest asset that any of us will ever own is our home.
And, you know, since these people are first-time home buyers or homeowners, when that water heater explodes, do some of them call you up?
We haven't had that happen. Sometimes people have called and asked for advice, but mostly we've done a pretty good job in training people, and they're pretty good. They know what to do next.
Well, it's a struggle, I think.
It is.
For and all of us, you know.
It is. Mm-hmm. Another thing, Marianne, we didn't talk about, but our homes are all Energy Star certified. That means that they are 15% more energy efficient than the code requires. And code is pretty strict. That means they're very well insulated. They have heating systems that are small ductless heat pumps that are very energy efficient. Many of our home buyers have told us that once they go into a Habitat home, their utility bills drop sharply because of how energy efficient the home is. They need to know how to care for that energy efficient home and to not make decisions like putting incandescent bulbs in where actually it needs to be an Energy Star kind of a bulb in a fixture. So we love that about our homes, and our home buyers seem to really love that as well.
Well, you've also incorporated some other interesting features like the making more compatible for people with disabilities. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. All of our homes are built what is called ADA visitable. That means that one entry is no steps. All of the hall and the entryways in the house itself can accommodate a wheelchair, as can the bathroom. And then if there's a disabled family member, we'll also do further modifications if the family member needs it. Another thing that's not as visible that we do to really help people with their health is we use low VOC paint so that it's not off-gassing. We changed all our flooring materials a few years ago so that we use wood laminate flooring, and we use now we're using tile in the kitchen and the bathroom so that those don't off-gas in the way that inexpensive carpet does. And I think it has really helped health for our homeowners. They can keep the floors very clean, keep the dust out of it that exacerbates a lot of kids' asthma.
Interesting. And does Habitat globally use the same sort of floor plans? Are there master plans, or is it all individual?
It is individual, and we certainly do a lot of sharing between affiliates, but there aren't expectations about the specific floor plan. There are expectations about the size of the home. I mentioned that our two-bedroom floor plans are 900 square feet, and that's what we're required to do by our organization, is to keep our home small and decent so that we can put in the money that's saved from building larger into building more houses. We don't build garages. We build minimal size homes that are more like what I suppose I would say you or I was used to growing up in. I grew up with four siblings, and we had a home that was 1,200 square feet, and we did fine, and that's similar to what we're trying to do now.
True. Now, earlier we were talking about the funding for Habitat, and you talked about donations, but there's another whole aspect that we really should mention, which is the volunteers.
Oh, boy, those are amazing volunteers. In a given year, we have about 400 volunteers. They are involved with us in building houses, and that's the most visible way volunteers are involved. But it's not the only way, because it takes a lot more than hammers, we say, to build houses. It takes people who work in our stores and volunteer there. We have lots and lots of volunteers. We have about 100 people who volunteer regularly in our two stores. That's just a remarkable gift, and it means that so much more of the money that is raised in the store goes straight to building homes. We have volunteers in other places, too. We have volunteers who work in preparing our homeowners. I mentioned the extensive home buyer preparation we do. Volunteers have put that together, and they lead that training. We have volunteers who help select the families, the applicants to purchase homes, who handle that material very confidentially and go through it and are very diligent in understanding and analyzing the applications. So we have volunteers who help with finances and all kinds of ways.
So how many paid employees do you have?
We have 8 full-time and 2 part-time.
And the volunteers, are they mainly just there for a day or two, or do some of them come back? How does that work?
We have a volunteer who worked more than 400 hours last year.
Wow.
We have volunteers who do one day in a year and volunteers who do a day a week every week of the year and everything in between.
And also, I noticed from pictures in the paper, certain groups, a bank or a church group or whatever, they volunteer en masse and come down and help out.
They do. It's such a great employee team building effort when people come and bring the people they work with. Jefferson Healthcare was there recently. The Bar Association is scheduled to be out there. The Boiler Room, another nonprofit, did it. Banks, as you say. It's been such a fun thing to see, and I feel like they go away and experience that they got to know each other in a different way. They were able to work together. They saw something that's going to last. They can drive by it again and see that it's there and it didn't go away. Most of our jobs, you know, I think, Marianne, we do them over and over and we don't see the results of it quite as clearly as we see when we build a house.
Well, Jamie, we're getting close to being out of time, but I just wanted to talk for a minute about the goals for Habitat locally. What are your plans?
We are in the last year of year and a half of our strategic plan to serve 50 families over 5 years. We're going to make it. We're at about 30 right now. We're going to increase significantly the number of repairs that we're doing to homes that are owned by low-income homeowners, and we'll start that in the fall. And we are really working to meet that goal.
Yeah, well, you're raising an interesting point, which is that in this climate, there are often a lot of repairs that have to be made, and I've heard cases where people, you know, just can't afford to replace that roof. That's a giant expense. Do you help out in cases like that?
In Quilcene, we've been doing repairs to homes that are owned by low-income people. We've been doing that for 3 years now. We've replaced roofs. We've helped with weatherization. We have helped. We've replaced siding. We've done minor repairs in concert with the Boeing Bluebills, and we are looking at expanding that to other communities.
Before we leave the subject of your current houses, when is the first one going to be ready up there?
They'll be done in June, the two houses at the Birkenfeld community. And we will post that on our website, and we'll try to get that word out widely to people.
Yeah, well, that's an exciting milestone.
They can follow us on Facebook and see the progress if people are interested. And we also do update our website.
Okay, well, that's really going to be quite an asset to the community. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jamie. I'm afraid we're almost out of time here. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot about Habitat for Humanity and its role in the community. And before we close, I'd just like you to mention one more time how, if someone wanted to get in touch with Habitat, what's that phone number and website again?
Please call us at 379-2827 or go on to our website, habitatejc.org. We'd love to hear from you, whether you're interested in volunteering or exploring getting a house.
Okay, excellent. You've been listening to Jamie Machieski, Executive Director of East Jefferson County Habitat for Humanity. Over the next month or two, we'll be hearing more about Habitat from other key players in the organization. Care and Connect is a special series on KPTZ. It's produced by Scott McMahon and Molly Klupfel. Engineering is being done by Richard Friedrichs, and editing is supervised by station manager Nora Petrit. Program director for KPTZ is Larry Stein. I'm Marianne McNellis. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, for more dynamic, eclectic local programming.